You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
How are we doing on that bidding process there, Dana?
Very funny.
By the way, the fact that you made that a news story, Dan, was classic.
Thank you. Love you, Dana.
Oh, you all are so funny.
It is the fountain that everybody is watching.
$225 current bid, 1 hour, 54 minutes, and 12 seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now.
I'm excited.
So the bidding closes at 7 o'clock tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
This will be exciting. This will be exciting.
I mean,
yep.
A very tense mood.
Dana was looking at her Ring doorbell camera, and she, I guess Johnny's at home weed whacking, and she goes, yep, that's my man. Those weeds don't whack themselves. And I just looked over and I go, he's probably clearing a spot.
He's clearing a spot for the fountain. The 10,000-pound fountain.
He needs more than a weed whacker to clear that spot.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, get the backhoe, Johnny. Get the backhoe.
You're going to have to plant some shrubbery around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm aware, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a multi-step process.
Going to beautify the whole neighborhood.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful. Oh, I'm very excited.
To get some, like a concrete mixer out there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you put it in the back along with all those stacks of doors, then. You
yes,
know,
there like you a, go.
You know, yeah. Junkyard.
A little ambiance.
Tell me what he just said.
I heard him.
What did he say?
Nope.
It'll look like a, you know, junkyard.
Yep. Sorry. Like Boyle's Joyland.
It'll look like a junkyard.
If you'd like to outbid Dana. I'm just kidding. Don't outbid Dana.
we did have one woman who texted in and said, I went and looked online.
Yeah.
I actually liked the fountain.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about bidding,
mm-hmm.
and my husband wouldn't let me.
Does he own a
no, he's probably
forklift a or a crane?
He's probably a listener to the show mm-hmm. and wanted to hear how it went at 7 o'clock when you ended up owning a 10,000-pound fountain that you're going to need a crane to put into yep. your backyard.
I think it's beautiful, too. It's lovely in
it
the
is,
setting
it is
that it is in. But then once you figure out all the logistics, you're
moving
like,
it. That's why it was the bidding started, by the way, to $1. And that's why.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like they're just trying to move it along, you know.
Well, all bids start at $1, don't they? And then
move it along.
You challenge that bid, and then they say, okay, you know, listen, we were really going to bid $224.
Right.
And they come in at $224.
It's actually $25 increments, and, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to break it to you, Dana. There's a 15% buyer's premium.
I saw that.
What does that mean?
You got to pay 15% on top of the $225.
Yep, I know that because I've shopped with them before.
Does that include the $10,000 shipping? Or? It does say delivery is available for most local bidders.
Oh, okay. Well, there
however,
we go.
Not for it doesn't say free delivery.
Says, however, not for this item.
Don't think it involves this item.
Mm-hmm. And then you got to pick it up on May 26th. It's a Thursday from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Plenty of time.
So you can be off for the day.
That's a gigantic window. It will be fine.
By the way, the NFL's 9-game international schedule came out today.
Oh, did we get the cute video, Sam?
The Kansas City Chiefs were not picked.
What do you mean?
There's international game this
year. There are 9 games.
Oh, yeah, we're not going over there. Yeah.
So that's 18 teams. And
what do you mean? I think that's great. Do you know how ticked off ever was after we played like a little lethargically after that? And people were screaming, well, yeah, you put them on a plane for 20 hours or whatever it took to get them there and back. And then they turn around and have to play here.
It was all those time zones going from Kansas City to Brazil.
Exactly what it was. There was jet lag and you know it.
Not to Brazil.
I'm thrilled they're not playing overseas.
I am too.
Now, here's a game where you would have jet lag. Week one, September 10th, the 49ers play the Rams in Australia.
Oh.
That's like a 3-day flight.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Then there's week three is the Ravens against the Cowboys in Brazil.
Do the teams have the option to give the NFL the gigantic middle finger on this and say we are
not
doing this?
No. I believe they do not. Then they have three games in London. Paris, Madrid, Munich, and Mexico City.
Did we get today or tomorrow, Sam, the schedule release videos that are always so funny now? Like
tomorrow.
The end of tomorrow. Okay. They have made their marketing departments are brilliant, by the way, but they have made this almost an annual holiday for me when they release the schedule, it is always very, very funny. And a lot of barbs back and forth between teams.
To make all of the male sports fans happy out there, I was informed that the "let's get this bread" reference was a sourdough bread bowl because Taylor Swift
makes sourdough.
Loves sourdough.
Yeah.
Huh. All right.
Did you hear the middleman in the Matthew Perry drug overdose was sentenced today?
2 years, right?
2 years. And when I first saw that, I was like, 2 years? That's it?
Should it be more?
Yes. Quoting here from 56-year-old Eric Fleming on his role in the death of the Friends star, "It is truly a nightmare I can't wake up from." He said that in court.
While being charged for giving some guy too much ketamine who's now dead.
That is now dead, Scott. Okay. "It's truly a nightmare I can't wake up from." He said in a somber voice from the podium before his sentencing, "I am haunted by the mistakes I made." The judge ordered Fleming, who has been free on bond, to turn himself in to serve his term in 45 days. He also got 3 years probation. He's the fourth of five defendants who pleaded guilty in the actor's death.
Mm. America apparently is undergoing a reading recession with children.
Oh, with children.
They say it predates COVID, by the way. Reading here from ABC News, researchers warn that the United States is experiencing a reading recession, a slide predating disruptions in schooling during COVID. Scholars at Harvard, Stanford, and Dartmouth analyzed state test scores from third to eighth graders from more than 5,000 school districts in 38 states, allowing comparisons across school districts and states in their education scorecard. What they found was sobering. Only five states plus the District of Columbia had meaningful growth in reading test scores from 2022 to 2025. Nationally, students remain nearly half a grade behind.
Oh, that's no surprise.
Where they need to be in reading scores, and only slightly better in math.
Yeah, meaningful growth. I'm pretty sure most of the studies show meaningful decline.
Well, I think what's happening is, yeah, as you go from fifth to sixth grade and sixth to seventh, for example, your reading acumen, for lack of a better term, gets a little bit better, but not where it needs to be.
I know a couple of high school English teachers who are not exaggerating when they tell me they are having to teach a number of their students subject, verb, object.
Really?
Okay, but let me ask you this.
Huh.
Was sentence diagramming really that critical growing up?
Is it not? I mean, we learned it.
I know what a subject and a verb and a direct object are.
Yep.
I don't know that the sentence diagramming was something that was...
Where you had to identify the adjective, the adverb.
Well, and there were slashes, and I think it's more important to retain and have an understanding of what you are reading, more so than the sentence structure you are reading, in my opinion.
These same teachers have told me that if they give their students like a five-paragraph in-class essay, the kids will literally just sit there and look at them.
Oh, that's got to be an oversimplification.
Why would they just look at them?
Because they're like, well, what do we do?
Huh.
But we got to ChatGPT this thing.
But for what you ended up becoming as a professional.
You have to write. You have to learn how to write. You have to know how to write.
So you need to know that you need a subject, a verb.
Absolutely. I just didn't like the diagramming of it.
Hmm.
And what is modifying what word? I hated that. And I think I am a really solid writer. But
you're
I hated it. You're
a very good writer.
My brain did not like that part of English.
What do you mean by modify?
Remember, you would have to take a test and it would say, what word is modifying this word in a sentence with the sentence diagram? I hated all that stuff. I think it's more important that we're teaching our kids when they read how to read to retain what they are reading.
Is it important to teach the kids the classics?
No.
Yes.
I knew you were going to say that, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones? How do you decide? You can't read them all?
Well, the reason why they're
classics.
The
teacher would have to decide. But I remember growing up, you know, in high school and even in middle school, having to read
Tale of Two Cities.
I never did read that book.
Tough read.
The Great Gatsby, which to this day is still my favorite book.
Yes. Really stuck with you, didn't it?
A Scott's separate piece.
And all a separate piece we had to read. Scott's like all of the classics.
You know, the big ones.
And the big ones and those other ones.
Boy, why can't I remember those books I had to read? Well, Tom Sawyer.
Huck Finn,
that's what I meant to say, yeah. Had to read that one. That was the first time I ever saw the N-word in print.
Mm-hmm.
I was shocked. Eighth grade.
It's important to read these things and to understand the history, the stories, the why, the concepts. There's a reason why they're classics. You know, James Fenimore.
Okay, stories. But Dan, for most adults today, and I have a decent library for myself and the girls, mm-hmm. and the boys too if they wanted.
Yeah.
When I go perusing the library to read a book, the last thing I would choose, quite frankly, is War and Peace mm-hmm. or A Tale of Two Cities, even though I slightly remember maybe enjoying some of that in high school.
Do you own those books?
I don't, but if I that's the point. I wouldn't, like, I want it to be more where, like, you know, I'd read a lot of historical fiction where yeah. you come away with, like, some actual worldly knowledge, even though the characters in the book might not actually be a true person.
So, War and Peace.
Too long.
Right, it is very long. But of course, as adults, we can choose what we want because we already have the background of having read many classics.
But I can
be able to choose. Okay, this is what I want to read.
But I'm all for a well-rounded education. I get it, right?
Yeah.
And part of going to high school, middle school, and high school is for you as the student to figure out what it is in life you want to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because you don't know.
And
for the most
to create
part.
A foundational base for them to launch from.
But I've made this argument before when my kids were in school and they would say to me, Dad, why do I have to learn trigonometry? I'm never, ever going to use this. And I had to give them the BS answer. Well, you never
Someday,
know if you're
going
to want to be an engineer.
Or an architect.
Yeah. And you might need to know that. To this day, I never came up with a good reason why they had to read Shakespeare.
But guys, I think we're missing the point here. It doesn't matter if they can read the classics or not. They can't even read them.
True.
Only 29% of folks graduating eighth grade in the United States going into freshman year of college, 29% can read at their grade level.
913-586-7798. 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So Dana and I were both doom scrolling through Facebook and came upon the same story at the same time. And I looked over.
As he read it, I was reading it.
I looked over at her and I said, oh my God, Salvador Perez. She goes, I know, I just read. Salvador Perez is 9 home runs away from breaking George Brett's home run record as the leading Royal home run hitter in team history.
Insanity.
Oh boy. Mm-hmm. Yep. Reading a story here about a reading recession.
And you can read it.
In the United States, where they're saying that reading levels are not where they need to be in the United States. And this trend started before COVID, before kids were sent home.
I hate that we paint with this gigantically broad brush. I assure you, all 4 of my children can read. They actually read a lot. It is concerning to me sometimes how much they read.
Maya reads a lot.
All the time they are reading.
Sarah is not the big reader in our family, but Maya has her own library at home.
Yes. You know why? Part of the reason why? She's still in school. Once they graduate and go into the real world, like if I asked Jack when was the last time you picked up a book, he will read, but it's not, they don't have the time like they did.
But
they're reading.
But Maya reads for entertainment.
Yes.
Not just for schoolwork.
No, they read for entertainment.
She has novel after novel.
Sam, the girls just finished a 5 series novel.
Yeah.
And 5. There are 5 books. They're this big.
It's called Harry Potter.
They're trying to get me to start with 1. It's been on my nightstand for 6 months. I'm like, I can't.
When I mention the stats, I'm not trying to say that nobody can read anymore. But it's not a false statement These are studies that have been done every single year, and the numbers have been getting worse and worse. A couple years ago, it was 31% could read. 29% of students entering freshman year in high school. These are the stats from the education department, not from the brain of Sam Stevie. Only 29% can read at their grade level when they enter freshman year. That's concerning. It's not really a broad brush. We're just looking at the brass tacks.
And whose fault is that?
I think it's a combination of both the school and parenting.
And the kids who cannot read at an appropriate level are not going to be surgeons or lawyers.
No,
right?
They're going to be ditch diggers.
No, but the world needs ditch diggers. I'm not saying it's okay.
My roommate used to say that
all
the time.
I'm just saying, you're not going to probably get into Yale if you can't read.
Let's go to Bob in Kansas City. Bob, hello.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you guys said it predated COVID or was before COVID, but you know, that's around the time where they started giving every student their own personal laptop. And nowadays, it only takes one click of the button, and that laptop reads whatever paragraph, whatever essay that your teacher assigns you to read or whatever article. So it's really them having those personal laptops, because back in the day, we had to go to the computer lab. And that was only for a short time period. But now they've got it right in front of them.
But can't you read a book on a tablet?
Yeah, but if there's a button, human nature is going to make you click that button to read it to you.
Okay. All right, man. Barbara, also in Kansas City. Barbara, hello.
Hi there.
Hi.
I am going to argue with Dana a little bit about the merit of diagramming sentences.
Okay.
You will never have to do it again. I get that.
And that's
I'm an
correct.
English major. I went far beyond diagramming and into language trees in my linguistics class, which made me want to throw
I'm
up.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I recovered. But when you diagram the sentence, it gives people a visual concept of how our language is structured. And it helps people who are visual learners or who are kinesthetic learners.
Okay.
Take something and tangibly make a connection with it so that they can carry that into other practices.
It's probably just not the way my brain was wired then, Barbara, because I understood. I knew how to write. I just knew how to write and speak and read and all those things. I couldn't tell you. It's kind of like you could solve the math problem. I was really good at it. But don't ask me to show you my work. Like, I can just tell you I know that there are patterns in math.
But do you not think it's important that you know what an adjective is?
Oh, absolutely.
What a noun is, what a verb is.
Now, for most people in their daily lives, if you said, give me your favorite adjective right now, red, okay?
That was not the word that came to my mind.
Why is that important, or adverb, beautifully? Why is it important for someone to be able to know that right now? I'm not saying it's not.
My favorite adjective when you mentioned that was going to be beautiful.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm.
Because without the foundation of knowledge, it's difficult to grow.
Maybe.
If you can't understand the basics of language, how are you going to then ingest, complex texts about World War II?
Or solve puzzles on Wheel of Fortune.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Absolutely.
Or Wordle games.
Oh, God, man, love me the Wordle. You know I love me the Wordle.
913-586-7798. Lindsay and Richard, you guys hang tight. You're next. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks.
Not looking to make this a topic, but we've talked a lot about the Hunt virus here of late.
Yep.
And by here, you mean here.
It is right here.
Now she does.
The three Kansans possibly exposed to the hantavirus are under observation just down the road from us at KU Hospital.
We'll get to Lindsay and Richard in just a moment, but I am not buying what they are selling.
KDHE says all of the individuals with a high-risk exposure have been transported to the University of Kansas Hospital for observation. Should any of them test positive, the public will, quote, be properly notified and additional information will be provided.
Okay. So when they were, if it's really not that contagious, Sam, you have ruined my life.
I've opened your eyes.
You have
to
ruined
question
my
everything.
Life, Sam. If it's really not that contagious, why the hazmat suits when they're going on that plane to bring
I
people
don't
off?
Know. Scott, I don't know.
Which, by the way, the infected are in their own hazmat suits. The people dealing with the infected are in their own hazmat suits.
And then they squirted them down
with disinfectant.
Bleach water.
They're spraying the outside of the hazmat suit with disinfectant.
Why?
It's not contagious. Nothing to worry about,
Scott. This isn't COVID 2.0.
Out of an abundance of caution.
Not the next pandemic.
That is the answer.
Okay.
From the text line, how's Dana's fountain? Well, we're an hour and 22 minutes away from finding out.
Still the high bid.
Are you still the high bid?
Yes, really? I just looked.
I've had it up in here the whole time.
I also just Googled, how does one dismantle a three-tiered fountain? And the Google result was, good luck.
You don't. Let's go to Lindsay in Ridge Hill.
Hi, Lindsay.
Lindsay, go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Go ahead.
So I was calling because I was listening to about the reading scores being down, and I can honestly say from experience with my children, it starts with the parents, obviously, but it starts in elementary school. So now they do not require kids that have a reading disability or troubles with sounds of letters require them to learn how to spell the words properly. They let them spell them how they think they sound.
Like phonetically.
Yes. And they also don't correct kids that, say, like my son, for instance, had a speech impediment. And instead of correcting him and teaching him the correct ways, they let the children do it incorrectly. And they say, well, if we correct him, it creates a complex. So these kids don't get corrected. And I mean, that's two districts out of Kansas that we have that problem in. And I'm like, that just doesn't make sense to me. You're trying to teach them the correct way, but you're letting them do it the wrong way. And we moved to the other state side. And of course, we're in a rural area. So I think that makes a little bit of a difference because they have more time for one-on-one. But they don't do that out here. They correct them. They make them do it correctly. They make it sound it correctly. There's so many things that these teachers are not particularly doing with these kids when it comes to words, letters, and reading that it creates a failure for them later on.
All right, I'm going to stop you there just because.
Is she on a train?
Or a plane?
Or an automobile?
Richard in Wellsville. Hello, Richard.
Howdy.
Howdy.
Well, I'm listening to the conversations. And I'm remembering back to 8th grade and 7th grade, a long, long time ago, before they started calling it middle school. And in those days, we had speech and debate, and we had competitions, speech competitions. My favorite books were always Edgar Allan Poe and The Odyssey and Longfellow and history. History was one of my favorite subjects,
which is what
caused me to get into performing and living history. But nowadays, heck, the phone that I use rings. That's it. I don't push buttons. If I want to read a book and I'm driving across country, I'll listen to the book. That's how I read it.
Hmm. Okay.
Good for you, Richard.
All right, man. I appreciate the call. Spotify is going full nostalgia.
Okay.
To celebrate its 20th anniversary, the streaming giant is launching Spotify 20, your party of the years. A new in-app experience that digs through your entire listening history and serves up a deeply personal mixtape of your life and music. And yes,
you'd be so bored by mine.
It does remember the song you first played.
Ever?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
And it also remembers that song that you played 47 times in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
The experience reveals never-before-shared stats. You know how they do at the end of the year? They do what they
call how many hours you listened.
I think it's called the Spotify Wrapped.
Yep.
It is, yeah.
Love it.
It remembers the exact day that you joined Spotify, your very first streamed song.
Creepy.
The total number of unique songs that you've listened to, your all-time most streamed artist. Your top songs across all the years, not just one.
They should call it Spotify. We're watching you.
You know, I catch myself from time to time when I get in my car. They have all of these different genres of my favorite music right in front of me, right on the screen. Okay. So I just push Elton John's face and I listen to Elton all the way home, right? Push whatever, Taylor Swift hits. Then they've figured out if you like a song, like when it's playing, you can hit a star, which means it's your favorite. Mm-hmm. They've thrown all of those into a file called Dana's Favorites. And I find myself more often than I should getting in the car and just clicking on favorites, which means you are basically listening to the same stuff
over and over again.
I know you do it too. Oh, sure. I listen to more Elton John and Willie Nelson and Taylor Swift and, you know.
But I don't hit favorites. I like to deep dive on artists.
Oh, I don't. I like belting it out with them, so I have to know the words.
Okay. What do you think the first song you ever played on Spotify was?
Or on Apple Music? It would have been probably an Elton John song. Probably Daniel, maybe.
Sam?
Probably Queen.
Ooh.
I know the first song I ever downloaded from LimeWire.
Oh, wow.
Committing federal crimes.
What was LimeWire?
LimeWire was the early, mid-2000s version of Napster.
Okay.
What was it?
Remember Napster?
Yes, I do.
It was We Will Rock You by Queen.
That's not even in the top 10 of their best songs.
I had a little black MP3 player. It held 512 megabytes, and We Will Rock You was the only song I had on
it. So if I go to Apple Music, which I still have on my phone, and I go to the very top, will that have been the first song that I ever downloaded?
Maybe. I don't know. I use Apple Music. I don't know.
Because if it is, I'm not mad about it.
What is it?
It would be Rip It Out by Ace Frehley.
Okay.
Where do you find this on Spotify?
I don't know. I don't think it's launched yet. Hang on. Let me look. It is a new in-app experience, so you have to have the app on your phone that digs through your entire listening history, serves up a deeply personal mixtape of your life.
But is it deeply personal?
Well, if you listen to it, is that not in and of itself
personal?
But I
probably listen to 100,000 songs a year.
I don't believe you.
I listen to a lot of music.
I know you do, but I think you listen to the same music over and over again.
And then I find a new artist, and I listen to that artist over and over again. It's hard to get me to listen to new stuff, but then once I do, I listen to it nonstop.
So you know that we have the Dana and Parks Spotify
the playlist.
Do you know what the most played song on Dana and Parks has been over the years?
But that doesn't count because we play it every week for—
Bad News.
Yeah.
You're wrong, Scott. Dana's right.
It's Celebration.
Yep.
But the second most played song on Dana and Parks.
Right Now by Van Halen.
It's Bad News. That's
correct. Right Now. If you hear Van Halen's Right Now, you know somebody has had a very bad day.
And thanks to the pandemic, the third most played song is It's the End of the World as We Know It.
And I feel fine. A pair of soccer cleats that were worn by Cristiano Ronaldo, which a cleaner found in the trash after a training session, has sold for?
How much?
$10,000.
Oh, my gosh. A smelly, sweaty pair of shoes?
Worn by one of the greatest players of all time, yes.
What are you going to do with them?
They were found in a trash can following a 2004 training session at Manchester United's training center. Mm-hmm. According to Graham Budd Auctions in England, he didn't like them. He being Cristiano Ronaldo, and after practice was over, he threw them in the trash.
Huh.
The cleats also have an R9, that's his number, 9, Ronaldo obviously the R, inscribed on the tongue of the shoes. Okay. And speaking of finding things, a woman from Pennsylvania found a 3.09 carat white diamond at a state park in Arkansas.
Have you seen the picture?
No, I have not.
It is a perfectly shaped heart, and it's about, you know, it's bigger than a pea, I would say. It's good size.
Okay. Keisha Smith found the diamond during a visit to Crater of Diamonds State Park. So this is this a natural diamond, or is this one that somebody lost?
No, I think natural. It's real. It's when you go
and
there.
It's shaped and, like a heart?
Yeah, it just happens to be.
You go there and you get to forage for diamonds, and a lot of people find them every year.
Huh. By the way, would you care to guess how many diamonds have been found in this park?
Oh, it's so many, isn't it? Most of them are
Since
just
Since it
teeny.
Opened in 1972.
Yeah, I think most of them are teeny tiny. Every once in a while, you get a whopper.
They have found 37,000 diamonds. Uh-huh. Since it opened in 1972. The largest diamond ever unearthed in the United States A 40.2 carat stone called Uncle Sam was found at the park in 1924.
If you found something that big, you wouldn't have even known it was a diamond. Because it doesn't look like it does in the display case when it's unearthed,
now,
right?
I'm dumb. A carat is its weight, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So a 40 carat diamond would be a huge...
That's a big old rock.
Diamond.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it would look like a dirty rock. A lot of people would just pass over it.
Huh. 913-586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott here on KMBZ. So have you heard this story about this woman, Corey Richens?
She is crazy.
Sentenced today to life in prison without the chance of parole for killing her husband. She later, after she killed her husband, she's from Utah, went on to write a children's book regarding grief. And turns out that she was the one who poisoned her husband. Sentence was life in prison without parole. That was the most severe punishment penalty she could have gotten. She is 36 years old. And tell everybody what her sons, she has three sons.
Oh,
and what
they, God.
What they did in court.
Heartbreaking. And they read letters from the boys in court. And one of them said, you know, I would be terrified if she got out, that something would happen to me or my brothers. Yeah. She took our dad away from us. And they repeatedly called her Corey.
Not mom.
No, no.
Huh.
And I had forgotten about this, Sam. She apparently tried to poison him with a sandwich first. And he thought she was trying to poison him.
Didn't he tell friends or
his
sister?
Yes, like something was up. Like, yeah.
There's something wrong. I think she's trying to kill me.
And then right after that, the fentanyl-laced Moscow Mule.
Now, what is a Moscow Mule? Is that a drink?
Yeah, it's like ginger beer. And,
got it.
Yeah.
Okay. The Kansas City mayor is softening his stance on the city's restaurants and bars, extending their liquor sale hours. He was originally last week, we told you, he had posted on Facebook that I don't hate fun. I don't hate freedom. I just don't know why bars have to be open 23 hours during the World Cup, and wanted to go back to, you know, bars that have a license to stay open until 3, they can stay open until 3. Those that don't still have to close at 1:30. He's changing that now, Mayor Lucas is, to 3 o'clock. If you have a 1:30 license, let me rephrase. Let me backtrack. If you are outside of the entertainment districts,
okay,
you can stay open until 3. This is the ordinance that he proposed to, this week. If you are in the entertainment districts, Country Club, Plaza, River Market, Riverfront, Westport, 18th and Vine, Downtown, Crossroads, Midtown, you can stay open until 5.
But you have to submit a security plan.
Correct.
To the city before getting approval. Really quick before we go, fountain update. 1 hour, 4 minutes away. Our top current bid, Dana Wright.
Yeah!
$225.
Woo! Who's got a crane, baby?
The 10-foot tall, 5-foot wide fountain is going to be yours.
We got to run. Birthdays today. Stevie Wonder is 76. Darius Rucker is 60. Stephen Colbert is 62. And Sarah Parks is 25.
Happy birthday, sweet girl.
Yes. Happy birthday, Sarah. Sam Stevie III is our producer, finest man in these United States. Dana Wright, my name is Scott Parks. God willing, back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe, be well, and be good to one another. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.